a look at the background of a modern aviation pioneer. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. In Mentone, Indiana, for the Popular Rotorcraft Association's annual convention and fly-in, Paul Plack here with Jay Carter Jr. of Carter Aviation Technologies. Jay, before we go any farther, let's get your title straight. What's your role in the company?
President, CEO, Chief Design Engineer, kind of the catalyst. Got a lot of great people helping and wanting to help and working and everything, but I'm kind of the spark plug, I guess, to get it all started. But couldn't do it without everybody else's help. I'm just kind of the catalyst, I guess.
Well, you know, a lot of guys who start out as designers don't ever figure that out. So, yeah, that's to your credit. Let me ask you how you got started in this whole idea of things that spin in the wind. Because you have a background in wind power plants and a number of other things. Tell us, give us kind of a brief life timeline of how you got involved with rotorcraft.
Got involved in 1964, 65, I guess. My father got his pilot's license. We used to fly to the East Coast, the West Coast. I think I went to my first PRA fly-in in 1964, maybe 65, there in Raleigh-Durham. It's maybe the third annual PRA fly-in. And so my father and I, of course, were both engineers. Daddy's probably the best design engineer I've ever known. So, you know, we would think about how we would build an auto gyro if we had the opportunity. And then the next summer it ends up that, you know, I needed to get a job in the summer. And my father said, well, why don't you just work for me? You know, and he always had a machine shop in his garage. So I grew up learning knowing how to run a lathe and a mill and to weld and to make things. And so that sounded like a great opportunity to me. I like doing that, you know. So, and it was, Daddy was just too busy to be able to do it himself. And it was a great learning tool for me. So I would work and build the first gyro during the daytime. And then Daddy would come in the evening and critique it. And he'd help me on the weekends and stuff. So fantastic learning curve. Like I said, my father was the best design engineer I've ever known. So we built that first one, and then the second summer, in addition to going to the fly-ins, built an all-composite with a ducted fan, filament-wound landing gear, a composite rotor blade with pre-rotator. Used a 100 horsepower Mercury outboard engine that we converted to the gyro. And that I built in the summer of 67, I guess. And then I graduated in 68, went to work at Bell Helicopter in their research and development department, and worked on the XB-15, which was the forerunner of the B-22 tilt rotor. Mm-hmm. So that's basically how I got started. Didn't finish the all-composite. It's kind of left in limbo. There were some shortcomings that I realized after I got into my more advanced engineering studies that I wasn't really happy with, so it just became part of our museum. We have a museum of projects that we've kind of worked on over the years, and so anyway, I had to make a living, and so I worked at Bell Helicopter, and then left Bell Helicopter, and my father and I, same sort of deal. He would come over in the evenings and work with us on the weekends, but we built a steam-powered automobile that was the first car in the world to pass the original 1977 emission levels, and did that for a number of years, and then got into the wind turbine business because of the oil embargo. Mm-hmm. There was a real need for way of producing electricity because the electric rates were really going up really fast. And so we kind of combined Daddy's composite technologies and both of our engineering abilities and my aerodynamic background and studies, and started building wind turbines, and we started selling those to the farmers and the ranchers in West Texas. And that went over really well. We ended up selling some to a utility and to the federal government, and those were put in some extremely high wind condition areas, And of course, our wind turbines were the only ones that went through some of those really high wind storms. So it ended up that we got lots of great publicity, and we got lots of people then that were wanting our wind turbines, because then they started putting in wind farms, and and we got a couple years back ordered just building wind turbines, because everybody wanted our wind turbine. It was the best out there. And
now, was it the best out there because of the composite technology? I mean, if I understand correctly, the biggest challenge in that industry is not making power in low wind, but holding them together when winds get beyond normal.
It's a combination of a lot of things. We used a two-bladed teetering rotor. Nobody had done that before. That eliminated all the gyroscopic loads, so that meant that if we don't have the loads, then we can make things a lot lighter because we don't have all that structure. So it was a combination of a number of things. It actually took us almost 4 years to develop and get this wind turbine to where it was very reliable and it could operate in the extremely high winds. We also developed a stall concept where we didn't have to change the pitch. It was designed so that the blade stayed at a constant pitch, but as the wind velocity increased, it automatically increased the pitch on the rotor and increased the power output, and it just tracked perfectly. And then when it would get to the really high winds, it automatically stalled to keep from overloading the generator. So that enabled us to continue to generate even in 75, 100 mile an hour winds when everybody else had to shut down because they were over generating from electricity. So we did really well at that. We state of California kept records of the wind farms that went in, and from an availability standpoint and from the amount of electricity that was produced. And for three straight years, 83, 84, 85, we led the entire state of California in not only the availability but also the amount of electricity that we produced per wind turbine. So that went really well, and so that became the business, you know, that supported me, and of course my father was involved in it also. And then I finally sold that business in 92, and in 94 I just left. Couldn't get along with my partner, so anyway, I made enough money to retire, but I wasn't ready to retire, and very interested in still in the auto gyros and the potential there, so I was looking for something to really get me up and get the excitement going again and get up at 4 o'clock, you know, and really motivated. So I started building what I called a personal air vehicle, and it was a 5-place auto gyro with wings so that I could unload the rotor blade, which I knew would improve the efficiency. But
let's pause there, because I want to get into this in more detail, and we need to take a break. But yeah, it's fascinating the way you transitioned from the wind turbine business into the auto gyro business, and we'll talk about some of the similarities. Talking to Jay Carter Jr., who is the president and CEO of Carter Aviation Technology, and we'll be right back.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack in Mentone, Indiana, for the 2007 Popular Rotorcraft Association National Fly-In and Convention with Jay Carter Jr., who is the president and CEO of Carter Aviation Technologies. Now, let's talk about how you made the transition from the wind turbine business into the auto gyro business. You were ready financially to retire, not ready from a career and motivational standpoint to retire, so you decided to go back a few years and pull out the autogyro dream. You did it up big this time, though. Tell us how the Carter Copter came to be.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it started out as a personal air vehicle for my wife and I and our three kids, so that we could basically travel around and with what we thought point-to-point transportation. We knew that it had the capability of taking off and land vertically, and we knew that it ought to be able to fly in the 130 to 150 mile an hour range. And we knew that if we unloaded the rotor blade, that we would get better efficiency. So that's basically the premise of what I started with. But as I got into the design of it and started really getting into the detail of it, I realized that if you could really slow the rotor down, wonderful things would happen. I mean, the efficiency just goes up exponentially as you start slowing the rotor down. And so then I'm saying, why hasn't anybody done this before? There's a lot of smart people out there, and there had to be some reason. So this was where it was really helpful that, you know, I had worked at Bell Helicopter, because then I was able to go back to some of the guys that I had worked with. In fact, is one of them was the program manager of the V-22, the whole tilt rotor program at Bell Helicopter. And he had retired about 2 years before I went back to see him and I got involved in this thing. And because I wanted to find out, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time working on something if there is a real engineering reason why it hadn't been done. Because obviously the potential was fantastic. And like I said, gosh, there's got to be smart. There are smart people. So why hasn't this been done? So anyway, I went and talked to him about it. And of course, he was very negative also. And to the point of almost being rude. But, you know, he did not want to see me spending a lot of time on something that was impossible to do. And so I left with that meeting with my tail between my legs, you know, because now this guy is a technical guru. Mm-hmm. Of rotorcraft, and you know, he's telling me that this is a real pipe dream. And so, you know, I went back and I went back through my notes and went back through my analysis, and I can't see anything wrong with what I've come up with. And so, you know, I can't sleep. I cannot sleep. I'm thinking about this all the time. So I called Ken up and I said, Ken, just go over with me and tell me where I'm making my mistake so I can get on with my life. Mm-hmm. You know, so Ken says, sure, come on down, bring your analysis with you, and I'll help you find your mistake. And he was so cocky about it, is he even made the comment, he says, oh, I bet my retirement pay, you know, that I'll find your problem. Well, boy, that's all I needed. I was down there in a flash, you know. And so we started going through it, and Ken said, I've never seen it analyzed like this before. I don't see anything wrong with it, but it's just not the way that we normally did. Well, of course, I didn't have privy to the way that the aerospace company or the helicopter companies had developed their programs. I basically started from scratch. I mean, literally start from scratch and develop my own equations using just the basic analysis, you know, basic formulas. And so that's why he said, I haven't seen it. I don't know see anything wrong, but I haven't seen it done this way. Well, after about 2.5 hours, Ken's getting pretty frustrated. I mean, he made a pretty big commitment that that he could find this. And so pretty soon he said, Jay, I don't see it right now, but I know that it's there. Leave it with me, and I'll find the problem, and I'll get back with you. Well, that's all I needed to move to the next level, and that was to build a 1/6 scale model and test it in a wind tunnel. And that's what we did.
Well, now, where did you find, as a retired guy, a wind tunnel where they'd let you come and do this, or did you have to buy that time?
Well, when I say wind tunnel, this is our poor boy wind tunnel, and it's nothing more than mounting your model on a boom 8 foot out in front of your pickup driving down the highway at 80 miles an hour on a very smooth day. That is a really good way to do it. I mean, that's virgin air coming across it. There's no turbulence or anything. So it works really well. It's just that you have to plan it. You can't do it at any time you want to. If the wind's blowing or something, then that gives you a skewed data. But nevertheless, you can get some good data that way. And so that's what I did. And we achieved a mu which is a tip speed ratio of 8. Well, here before, people thought it was impossible to even attain a tip speed ratio of 1, uh-huh. let alone 8. And so we were able to demonstrate that this worked, and it was a stable rotor.
Now, when you say a Mu ratio of 8, you're talking about 8.0. You're talking about a forward aircraft speed that is 8 times the speed of the rotor tip.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. What we achieved with this CCTD, our first demonstrator, this five place, was a Mu of 1, which is the first aircraft to ever do that. And, of course, in that case, we were flying at 170 miles an hour, and the tip speed had been slowed down to 170 miles an hour, which meant that the tip speed of the retreating blade was 0. And everything inboard on that particular retreating blade saw reverse flow over the rotor blade. I mean, it was going over the trailing edge first. Mm-hmm. So this was why this was considered to be really impossible. But anyway, we did the wind tunnel test, the poor boy wind tunnel test, and I took the data, because what we did is we did it at a number of different Delta 3 angles and a number of different angles of attack on the rotor blade collectively. And I took this data back to Ken Warnke. And I'm telling you, it did not take him 5 seconds, because I know Ken had been working on this, and he hadn't found anything wrong. I know he didn't. And so when I showed him the data and that we'd achieved a Mu of 8, Ken was 180 degrees. I mean, he was on board, hook, line, and sinker. He said, you know, there was a guy that retired with me that was head of rotor dynamics and structures. Let's bring him on board. I'd like for him to take a look at your rotor design, and let's just make sure. I mean, it was like he was part of the team. And so then he brought also on the director of flight testing there at Bell Helicopter that retired. When he retired, there was a bunch of fellows that retired basically all kind of at the same time. So we brought him on board, and of course then he brought the best test pilots on board. And so it just, you know, really started developing momentum here, because now you've got the credibility of Ken Warnke, who is, you know, he's the helicopter guru, you know, and he was the program manager for the B-22 program, and here he is on board, you know, supporting this project. So that kind of got the interest of NASA, and of course there were people within NASA that were feeling just like Ken Warnke, you know, this is BS, you know, this guy is, you know, he's a real flim-flam guy, you know, he's even sold Ken Warnke on this thing, you know, yeah. And of course they were really very skeptical, and we couldn't get anywhere because they were kept knocking it down because they said it was impossible, and this was, but finally one of the NASA administrators came to me and said, Jay, would you be willing to go out to Ames Research, and would you be willing to talk to these guys? And he says, because we can't get anywhere, you know, they're just negative on this thing. And I said, sure, I'd be glad to go out and do this. And of course, our patent attorneys were saying, Jay, that's fine, but you have got to make sure that they all sign a non-disclosure agreement. You just cannot, and they will try to suck you in to get you to talk about it without signing an NDA. Well, true enough, that's what happened. We spent the first 30 minutes where they were not going to sign an NDA, and of course I think they probably thought that I was going to back down and go ahead and explain everything, and I wasn't. And so pretty soon one of the guys broke down and says, okay, let me look at this NDA, you know, this non-disclosure agreement. And he looked at it and he says, okay, I could agree to this if I changed a few things here and there. And so he did, and then after that everybody else decided to do it. And for the next 5.5 hours, now you got to understand, this is a federal government, you know, bureaucracy, and these people are used to taking their coffee breaks, and for sure they take their lunch breaks, and and so I mean, for the next 5.5 hours it was a focused discussion. The only person that got up to leave was a lady who said, I just got to go to the bathroom, you know, but I mean, it was that focused. And then afterwards they were saying, Jay, do you want some money? Could you use some money to help speed this up? And I said, no, I don't really want any money, because I've heard some real horror stories about dealing with the government and accepting money. And so then they went on to convince me that there are some SBIR programs that are in place to help this sort of thing, you know, where they have the expertise to recognize potential And so then they support that, and then there's some government money. And the main reason that they do that is to give the U.S. a technological advantage over other countries and to build up industry that could eventually get into production. And, of course, then that happens. You're paying taxes, and so the money, the government gets their money back that way. So they convinced me that this was a thing to do.
Let me stop you right there, because I think we're going to do something we almost never do here at Aero News and continue this discussion tomorrow if you can spend a few minutes more with us.
Yes, that'd be fine.
All right, we're talking with Jay Carter, who is the president and CEO of Carter Aviation Technologies here at Mentone, Indiana, where the PRA has been holding its 2007 annual convention and fly-in. We'll continue our conversation tomorrow and talk about the formal startup of Carter Aviation Technologies, the Carter copter that most of our listeners know, which was the egg-shaped craft with the two sweeping tail booms, and what Carter's doing today. So join us again for tomorrow's special feature. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.